This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. This is your program for exploring sex, sexuality and self. My name is Andrew the Apprentice.
And I'm James Findlay.
And James, this evening we are going to be finding out about In the Loop, which is a program run by Living Positive Victoria. It's been going for a couple of years and it is about, it is really designed for carers, partners, friends and family of people living with HIV. We are going to be having Warren in with his best friend, Dahlia, and they're going to be talking about what their experience has been.
Yeah.
And also Judith, who runs In the Loop, will be with us very shortly too. So,
which will be wonderful. But for our final hour, yes, in our final Thursday show, we've got a few people in to talk about In the Loop, which is a workshop for carers, partners, friends, and families of people living with HIV. And Warren, Deba, and Judith are with us in the studios. Hello, Warren and Deba, to start off with.
Good evening.
Welcome. How long have you two known each other? You're besties, right?
Yes, we are. We've known each other since 1989, so quite a long time.
Wow. Yeah. It's quite a while.
So how did you get to know each other? Where did you meet?
We met because Warren transferred from engineering into science.
At university?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. At Monash. Yep. And we were doing a prac at the practical.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I was in a different group, uh-huh, and my friends were in the group next door. Yep. So we just, you know, divided by the partitions.
Yep.
And I went over to say hello.
You were a very smiley girl. Smiley person on the other side.
I was not very good at the practical side of things with the prac. So, you know, there'd be hour incubations for things. So I zipped over to say hi and they just met Warren because he joined their prac group.
Yeah,
so
right.
That was, 89 and... Yeah.
25 years ago.
Yes.
A long time ago.
Yeah. Wow.
25. It's been a wonderful friendship.
It has. It certainly has.
So, you know... you were out at the time, Warren, as a gay man?
I was at university, yes, yeah, but not in the rest of the world, not to my family.
And, and was Deba someone you'd drag along to Commercial Road back in the day?
Yeah, not really. Deba was... I think we talked so much. We ended up failing one of our exams. And we did a supplementary together over the summer when everyone else was going to Commercial Road and out partying. So we got to know each other well then.
Mm-hmm. And it was at the time, and part of the reason for that was my grandmother died that year and very close to me. And so I was in Adelaide a lot. And so, you know, that's my excuse. It wasn't the talking. And Warren also, his brother died earlier in the year, and I didn't know that. Uh-huh. And we only got to know each other a lot better because we had to sit this supplementary. We both got, I think, 48.
Right. And see, around the times when maybe special consideration didn't.
No.
So you'd be fine these days.
Yeah, exactly.
My grandma died, my brother died. Oh, that's right. Special con, extra points.
Here's your degree.
Yeah.
No, not then. We had to do it the hard way.
That's right.
So, and you obviously stayed friends through uni. You didn't drift apart after uni.
No.
So
some of the best friends you make at uni these days.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think a lot of them I don't really know. Deep is really the only one that I'm in contact with. So,
yes, probably.
It was a long time ago.
It was.
Well, it was.
Yeah. And so, Warren, you were a gay man, but you said you weren't out yet to your family.
No,
at all.
No, not at that stage.
And so, what was uni like back? What was being a gay man like back then? Was it all sex, drugs, and rock and roll? Or?
Well, I guess engineering and science was rather nerdy at the time. So there was a gay collective, and
really?
we used to go skiing.
Sounds hot.
Yeah, of course. You all wore flannelette shirts, which would be popular now too. There was a bit of partying, but there was a lot of sort of studio stuff as well and serious stuff, and the collective was quite active at Monash at the time and quite political, so there was a serious side, which was good.
Now May I ask, when did you become HIV positive?
In 1991. So, okay. Yeah, it was about 2 weeks prior to our final exams. And interestingly, because Judith here was one of the people that gave me my results back then. So,
wow.
Yeah, so we've done a full circle tonight. Yeah, which has been amazing.
So
This was in the peak of
yeah, absolutely. HIV. So, and I think I passed out at the time and it was completely unexpected.
Do you remember being told?
I do remember being told, and then I remember everything went completely fuzzy and blurry afterwards. And but it's weird. I can remember the drive home that day too. Just driving straight to my, I was still at my parents at the time, and I can remember every turn. I can remember the radio on 3XY. I can remember absolutely everything, and then thinking, oh my goodness, what am I going to tell them? And, you know, my brother had just passed away. There's only me now, and all the burden's on me, and I'm probably only got a couple of years to go as well. Mm. So what am I going to say? It was horrible. It was an awful time. Things are different now, though, but back then, yeah.
Did you tell your parents straight away?
No, not for several years. Yeah. I was in a relationship, and I think my partner at the time ended up saying, look, you know, we've got to tell them, and turns out they knew. I know my mum produced an article saying that, you know, it was titled My Son Was Gay, and it was from The Age back in the, you know, the early 90s. Yeah, so they'd guessed, I think, because, through illness and weight loss and other side effects.
Right. And was it the case that you talked to Diva soon? Did you tell her straight away?
No, I told another friend the day that I was diagnosed. And she was probably, we'd been close friends for a few years that time, and she was very religious. And she reacted in a bad way, and her parents said, no, you can't see Warren anymore. So she basically dumped me as soon as I told her. And I thought, oh, my goodness, so this is the reaction you get when you tell people that you've been diagnosed with HIV back in the early 90s. So I shut down and didn't tell anyone and completely withdrew. And I lived this life, I think, for probably several years where I refused to tell people. And it wasn't denial on one hand, because I knew I had it, but I was so scared of what the reaction would be if I told people I've got it. I lost a very good friend.
Yeah, yeah.
From just
Will
being honest.
Will I lose
honest.
All my friends? Yeah. I'll lose my family.
Exactly, at a time when someone needed some help. So I was very nervous about telling people. But we then got to a point with Diva where, you know, treatments became available later on in the 90s, and you're taking heaps of tablets, and it was just obvious.
Well, yeah.
You don't take that many vitamin C's and vitamin D's and every meal at every time and all that sort of thing. So.
Yeah.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Andrew and James with you. We're speaking with Warren and Diva this evening. Warren's HIV positive. Diva's his best friend. Been best friends for 25 years. Now, Warren, you were just mentioning before that Sarah converted, became HIV positive, you'd spent a couple of years really concerned around what the reaction would be to your being positive.
That's right. Yeah.
So what was, just to recap some of those thought processes that were happening at the time.
So I think you know, you experience a bad reaction to something, such as my best friend at the time rejecting me because of it.
Yep.
I mean, that's a significant thing. You're putting a hand out for help and then bang, the door shut. So the thought was, am I going to get that reaction from everyone? And even though that might be an unrealistic thought, you start to think, is this the natural reaction? It's so stigmatized at the time. Mm. People are so scared.
Mm. So then how long did it take for you to tell the next person?
I reckon about 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, at least. I mean, you know, I was so scared to tell people. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd be rejected, and there was a lot of rejection. And even when you think about it, you know, in the gay scene at the time, there was a lot of rejection as well, and a lot of stigma, and there still is in some way. So, but it was this single event just made me petrified of telling people.
Diva, do you remember before being told what Warren was like? Was he? Did you have any indication beforehand at all?
That
something had changed?
Warren is quite good at sort of going on with things and everything's okay. But yes, there were signs in the sense that We were talking about it earlier. One of the things was that he would, if we were out, and then I'd say, oh, why don't, let's go out for dinner, or why don't you stay for dinner? He would say, oh, no, I've got to go. I've got to get going now. And I'd say, oh, are you sure? And I'd often wonder why he wouldn't.
Oh, is that because of the pill taking?
Yeah, yes. The pill taking.
Because of the pills, or we'd organise things, and then he would call and say, I can't come. I pulled out, and I would often wonder whether, oh, okay, maybe he's had enough of the friendship.
Yeah.
Or, gee, he is ill a little, you know, a bit, what's going on? And it does cross your mind, but you're sort of thinking, oh, no, he, you know, if it is, he'd tell me. But there was a lot of things like that that you think, it's not normal, and you're not quite sure what it is.
Yeah.
And sometimes you wouldn't hear from him for, you know, a week, a few weeks, and we'd talk regularly, or before texting.
Before it's on the landline.
On the landline with the phones that you dialed with your finger. So there were those things that are concerning, but you're not sure. And I was also in a situation where I think, I don't want to ask because that's private, and, you know, I'm not quite sure really what to ask.
And then did you know anything about HIV?
Yes, look, my background is, we met, you know, doing the science degree, so I studied physiology and immunology.
Oh, wow, okay.
So you could tell anyone.
Yeah, I know.
So when T cells were mentioned, I had to brush up a bit on my, you know, immunology. But yes, so probably more than your average person.
Sure.
But again, certainly no expert.
And no... You had no other lived experience of HIV.
That's right. And still, to this day, Warren is the only person I know that is positive, that has told, you know,
told me,
obviously.
Yeah. I guess that's one thing that I'm beginning to realise how important In the Loop is the fact that we live in a bubble, Andrew.
We do.
We live in a bubble where we know a lot about HIV.
Exactly.
And infection and T cells and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
But I guess... the average Joe
doesn't.
Perhaps doesn't.
No, particularly family and friends.
Yeah.
Outside the community.
Yeah, that's right. I think perhaps this is when we will go to Judith just in a bit to find out just exactly what, how In the Loop became and why it's so important. Because it's easy for you to say, oh, I just had to brush up on my T cells. If you were down at a picnic in Dandenong and brought that up, and, well, I don't know, you probably wouldn't picnic anyway. In Dandenong, but you were out in the burbs and someone brought up T cells, they wouldn't know what the hell you were talking about. But it's quite common for someone living with HIV to... talk about the T cell gap.
That's right. And there was nothing like this group around then. So you can imagine how much easier it would have been to be able to say, hey, Deba, look, I think you should go and talk to Judith. She runs a group.
Yeah.
It'd be great. But there was nothing, of course. So,
it would have been fantasy land.
Yes. And also to ask those difficult questions that, you know, you don't want to feel like you're imposing on Warren or being insensitive about things. But
asking too many questions.
Yes. And, you know, impinging on his privacy or asking awkward questions you can ask to a group, like if you are involved in the Loop, where you can ask it freely without worrying what the reaction will be.
Mm-hmm. Now, Deba, do you remember being told?
Yes, look, I remember it was around the medication. So I was over at his house, opened the pantry, and this time I think he made no effort to hide.
The spice rack's full.
He was taking lots of medication. I said, oh, you know, gee, there's a lot of medication there. And that's when he...
Yeah, what are you spicing your food with?
You were opening pills. Up a pharmacy, you know. And that's when he told me, and I remember my initial reaction, just feeling quite sad for him, really, because he'd been through his, you know, the death of his brother, which was a big impact, and even coming out to certain friends with, you know, being gay, and then this again. And but, you know, one thing I will say about Warren is he's very resilient, and it's not something that's controlled his life. It's part of his life and he manages it well, but he doesn't make it a central part of his life. And I think, you know, anyone else may, you know, obviously people deal with things differently, but I think I've been sort of fortunate in that he doesn't, you know, it's not something he incessantly talks about or everything's geared around that. Mm. It's a part of his life and he manages it. Mm. So it's, yeah.
And at the same time, in the early days when, you know, there was a lot of sickness, I could easily say to Deba, look, I'm having a bad patch at the moment. And it was great because she would understand and just the relief when she did know and I didn't have to disappear and go quiet for a few weeks. So.
Yeah.
And Warren, for you, when the disclosure came, was it a case of you were ready at the time for that?
No, I don't think it was. I think it just...
It wasn't that you had gone, you knew she was coming over and you hadn't, okay, I'm going to put all the meds out.
I think it was a case of I hadn't prepared. Normally I would have put my meds away and taken them secretly in another room or something. And I think I just had to take them there. And I thought, oh, well, now's the opportunity presented itself. It was like, well, the universe aligned and it was it. She's here. I'm taking them. Bang,
this is happening.
Let's just do it. And I counted to 10 and did it. So, yeah.
And it definitely made things easier because then it does explain a lot of things and then we could work around it. So if we were going out for dinner or seeing other friends, he could take his medication. We could both go somewhere or, you know, you can work things out. Oh, if it was at my house, you can give him some privacy to take it. It just made things a lot easier and it wasn't that difficulty in trying to hide things.
And we've got to think too, medication back in the early stages of medication had to be taken with grapefruit juice or, you know, had to be refrigerated. It's not just like it is now,
right?
A couple of tablets here and there. Yeah, exactly. So there were complications. So the not being able to go out or not being able to travel, you know, there was a time when there was a medication that was injectable and you had to inject it twice a day, but you had to you know, reconstitute it in liquid beforehand. So that took an hour of preparation to do twice a day. So, you know, there were considerations. And so I think Deba was over and I thought, oh, I can't hide this.
And you mentioned relief.
Yeah, absolute relief. It was. And I think the biggest relief was, well, I didn't get the reaction that I got the first time I told someone.
So, yeah.
Which was
Did it great. Open the floodgates?
No, cautious. Yeah. I think it was selective. I thought, I'll just be selective about who I tell. You know, you've got to maintain the career world out there is a different world as well.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was for relief, absolutely.
Great.
Hide and seek.
James Finlay and Andrew the Apprentice with you on Hide and Seek, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. We are talking about In the Loop program, which is run by VAC and LPV in some kind of partnership there. Warren and Deba are with us in the studio talking about their besties.
Their besties.
Been besties for 25 plus years. And Deba has been partaking in the In the Loop program. And Judith, you are one of the trainers. You're a counsellor, trainer, organiser.
That's
What's
right.
your title?
I think facilitator.
Facilitator. That's very classy way of saying it.
We call ourselves facilitators.
You're a facilitator of In the Loop program. And I think we touched on this a little bit when Deva was talking about her experience when Warren told her that he was HIV positive. And the fact she said, oh, got to get into the books again and find out all about the T cells, which is great for someone who's studying science. But for your average person on the street, there's a lot more to learn about HIV than we might think.
Absolutely. And I think this is part of what In the Loop is about, because it's a group which is open to anyone who actually is supporting or closely involved with someone who's living with HIV. This doesn't actually exclude people who have HIV as well. They can come into the group if they're in a supportive relationship with someone else with HIV. But there is actually providing a space to actually, we provide information about the virus. Not, we don't go on and on with blackboards and things, but we actually answer questions about basic things around T cells, health, reasons for going to doctors, things that are going to be of relevance to someone who's living with the virus, and the importance of medication and stuff like that. And then also then we provide a place for people to ask questions and also to look after themselves. I think the reason for the group is we find that often if you're supporting someone who's living with HIV, you can actually ignore your own health needs in some ways.
How so?
Well, because I think you can get into the position of, oh, perhaps if Warren's, for instance, if Diva was wanting to go on holiday, oh, I better not go on holiday because Warren might need me to go to the hospital with him next week. Sure. I'm not saying this is the case because Warren doesn't need to go to the hospital. But you might think, or if you're a pet, we had some parents in the group that we ran last year.
Yep.
And they were actually quite silent because they didn't want to talk or ask questions, their son questions about it. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't necessarily being very forthcoming about what was going on for him health-wise. So we talked about ways that they might be able to ask and what's actually standing in the way of that. And it actually opened up huge communication channels for people around having conversations. And this actually brought down all the sort of fear around, I can't ask, I better not say that.
Yeah.
And I think that's really very helpful.
And I think for that, you know, some people might think, oh, well, can't they just find out the information from the person living with HIV? But, you know, not every person living with HIV needs to be a walking advocate or wanting to tell everyone about. Yeah, walking encyclopedia about.
They also may not feel comfortable asking us as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely. So it's not only, and that's one part of the group is actually providing information and the support's available. Just the fact that there are groups being run at the VAC, there's Living Positive Victoria, there's the RDNS, there's the Positive Living Centre and things like that. So there are all sorts of agencies that provide support, which are useful if you know someone with HIV that you weren't necessarily aware of. So there's the information side of things. It's also really, it provided a place for the sort of some degree of the stigma to be broken down. Because I think there are an awful lot of people who are in this situation who don't dare, they don't tell anyone else in their family. It's not like if you've got a friend who's got cancer that, you know, you're taking them to the hospital. They are often feel they mustn't mention the reason that their son is not working or isn't terribly well, because if they say that, then they're going to have to explain how come or what's going on. And this this group actually provides a forum to build up some sort of support within the group members themselves. So they don't actually feel that they're necessarily the only ones. And, yeah, there are more people who are in the same situation. And I think breaking down that sense of isolation can be really, really helpful.
As James said before, I mean, we live in a bit of a bubble around HIV and we don't necessarily appreciate how little other people know about it because they don't have to know about it. What are some of what would be some of the most common questions that come across in the groups that might come from, say, parents?
Is it
fear of death?
I was going to say that everyone says he tells me I'm not going to die, but we still think that he will because they haven't actually been in this bubble, which we know. This isn't going to sort of, you're not going to die.
Yeah.
But actually out there, there is a belief that perhaps they're just trying to say that to make it sound a bit nice and dress it up. But they're not actually telling me the truth.
Yeah. And I mean, my partner's HIV positive and that was his mother's reaction.
Right. When are you going to die?
When are you going to die?
Yeah. And I think that's a really common, and when you say you're not going to die, then you're just saying that to make it nice for me.
Yes, That you're not telling me the truth.
Of course you're going to die. Yeah. That's a common,
everyone is.
But we're all going to die, yes. So I think that's hearing that, getting some information not from the person with HIV is a really helpful thing.
Mm.
And, that in itself.
And you mentioned stigma before, and the stigma by the person who's caring for or supporting the person living with HIV, for example, in a work scenario where, oh, no, I've got to take some time off work because I've got to take my brother who's with HIV I've got to take my brother to hospital. What are some of the strategies you use to those supporting those living with HIV around stigma and disclosure themselves?
I think it's very difficult just to sort of flick a switch and say the stigma is no more.
Yeah.
But actually, there's something that happens around just taking the big courageous step to actually come into the group in itself is a a bit of a punch in the stomach for stigma, because you're actually walking into a room where you don't know who's going to be there, and you're sitting down and saying, you know, my flatmate's living with HIV, or my brother has HIV, and then going around the room and meeting other people in similar situations is destigmatizing in itself. And I'm not saying everyone sort of skips out with no feeling of stigma, but there is a sense that perhaps the person I was sitting next to did actually tell a couple of people and found this really, really helpful. Maybe I could tell one other person, or perhaps my sisters could know about this as well, and I could get a bit more support. And that the whole sort of diluting of stigma is going to be helpful in some way. And also there's an ongoing support, you know, that they take each other's numbers and they can then reconnect. And the group we ran last year, they're going to come back and we're going to have a sort of catch up, 12 months on, and see how everyone's going.
Because I'm sure they would have stayed in touch. Many of them would have stayed in touch with at least one person. Yeah, I think some of them
did
stay,
and they were very curious about what happened to other people in the group subsequently to what the stories that sort of unfolded in the group. So I think that... I can't say there's no stigma at the end of the program, but I think that the people who come and share have this extraordinary sense that perhaps I'm not the only one, and I'm not the only parent, I'm not the only brother, and this can make a big difference.
Joy 94.9.
James Finlay and Andrew the Apprentice with you for Hide and Seek. We are 10 minutes out of the program. And the boys from Purple Speech will be taking over from us after 11.
That's right. Now, we are talking about In the Loop, which is a workshop for people who support people living with HIV. Judith, Deba and Warren are here with us. Now, Judith, we're just touching on what some of the content that the workshop covers. And self-care, it's obviously a critical part of this, I would have thought.
Yes, it's not only information and about the virus and the supports available, but we also spend part of the time talking with the participants, or letting the participants talk about how they look after themselves and also what the meaning of illness is in their lives. So it's an opportunity to have a bit of a think about how they care and how they interact with the person they're close to who's living with HIV, and how that might impact on how they go about their lives and look after themselves. And yes, if it is sort of getting a bit too big and taking up too much room, and are they then putting their own needs,
their own health,
into the back seat, and how helpful is that? So giving an opportunity to sort of give permission that you are allowed to go to Bali for a fortnight, and someone like Warren will survive without you.
I'll let you go.
Yes.
If I can come.
Yeah, well, no, you stay behind.
Yeah. The whole point is separation. Yeah.
So that's, so I think just giving voice to that is often helpful, because I think I know some people who sort of get sort of so caught up in the whole role of being the central person, especially if someone's quite isolated with HIV and hasn't told very many other people, that if it's a very, very close secret in this person's life, it's much harder for them to feel that they can call on other people to come in and, you know, do a bit of helping and supporting and driving or whatever it might be as well.
Now, In the Loop is run by VIC and Living Positive Victoria. Looks twice a year it's going to be run.
We're going to run it a couple of times a year. Yeah.
And the next course is happening very soon, the evening of Friday the 17th of October, and also all day Saturday the 18th.
That's
during
right.
the day at Coventry House. Now, best way to get information is to go to the Living Positive or the VAC websites.
Probably the best way at this point, given that we're sort of 2 weeks out, is to ring, Living Positive.
Yep. Yes, you can do that. It is certainly on the Living Positive website, and all their numbers are there. So go on there, check it out. Now, Warren, for you, what do you think it would have changed back in the day when, if this had been available?
I think it would have been a lot easier to refer people to it, because I didn't know. It was all about me. It was all about death. Everything was negative, just stigma and rejection. Everything was bad. So I would only convey that to people that I tell. So for Deba, for example, you know, it's all, what she, is she going to think I'm going to die? Which doctors am I seeing? What tablets am I taking? To be able to refer someone to a group that could provide this information, but also provide support that perhaps I couldn't,
yep,
being the positive person, would have been great. And possibly would have facilitated me coming out to more people as well.
Now, James, before we go, there is a program that is coming up soon for people who were diagnosed with HIV a long, long time ago, pre-HEART.
That's really kind of you to let me talk about that as well. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is another group which is run by the VAC, and I'm one of the facilitators. I think this is this new word.
Great word.
Great word. And it's for people who are diagnosed before 95. So, Warren is going to be, is already enlisted in this group.
Absolutely.
And we're going to be, it's an 8-week closed group for people who are diagnosed before there were any medications. And at the time when they were people in, who were diagnosed over 20 years ago, they were actually given sort of pretty poor prognosis and told that, you might as well set your house in order and you won't necessarily ever get to the age of 30 or 20 or whatever it might have been, not perhaps not 20. And it's an opportunity to talk about how your life has changed as a result of this diagnosis.
Yeah.
And how you've made choices, which has actually shaped the virus has shaped your life in a way. You're meant to be really happy because you are alive.
Yeah.
But in a way, you're forgotten. I think you've been forgotten. I think this group of men have been forgotten.
Oh. And you don't realise how the choices you've made in life, you might think are completely unrelated to HIV, such as career, but they're not.
Yeah.
And you start to realise as you get older that everything is related back to it in some shape or form.
Who you chose,
who you chose, decided to do.
Or
exactly.
Who you chose to tell.
And you're there with other people who have made the same decisions, perhaps.
Well, lots of very similar decisions.
Yeah. Mm.
And yes, and this is going to be, it's going to start on the, I think it's the 24th of October, again, at the if you contact
VAC.
Me at the at VAC or ask to speak to one of the counsellors there, they'll be able to give you information.
Great. So that is the pre-HEART course. Now, Deba, if we wrap it up, you've made it through the night, all of you. Well done. And and Deba, we'll finish up with you. Deba, what would you say to people who have someone living with HIV in their lives about the workshop and why they should be going to do this? And why is it so important to learn about what you need to do yourself and what you need to know yourself?
I think the key thing is the language, so how you approach the conversations and to gain better understanding, because I think you hear lots of things in the media, even hearsay, might be your circle of friends, but, you know, are they accurate? So I'd probably say the two key things are the language, about how you can communicate with others, as well as the person you're caring for that is positive. And the other aspect is just getting a better understanding yourself.
And taking care and learning how to take care of it yourself as well. Warren, obviously you be fantastic if everyone could go this course and find out more about it.
I think so, absolutely. I think it's filling a big gap that we've needed for years. And, and I think when someone reaches out and, be there, listen to them, and this gives an opportunity for people to be listened to who need support.
Warren, Deba and Judith, thank you so much for joining us this evening. If you want more information about In The Loop, then get in touch with Living Positive Victoria. The office is open tomorrow. The course itself is running at Coventry House on the 17th and 18th of October. And James, we'll be back to wrap it up very shortly.
Yes, we will. You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.